afraid of the dark? Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Welcome to episode 29. How are you doing?
Fucking tired.
I know. How are you doing, listener? I hope you're okay. Just relax. Drink your beverage, whether it be non-alcoholic, alcoholic, or very, very alcoholic. I don't
know. What are you doing?
I don't know. Anyways, sit back, relax, and listen to a lot of history and a little bit of hauntings. But first, what are we drinking?
I'm drinking a tropical fruit punch beatbox.
And I'm drinking a pink lemonade beatbox, of course, because they're very good.
Mm-hmm. They're cheap.
Yeah. Get them for 2 for $7 at Casey's or just under $4 anywhere else.
And they're high alcohol content. That's bang for the buck.
Yep. All right. Here are 5 fun facts about America's national parks.
All right.
Five fun facts. Number 1. On March 1st, 1872, Yellowstone National Park was designated by President Ulysses S. Grant, becoming the first national park in the United States and the world.
Nice.
This act solidified the concept of creating national parks and sparked a global movement that established over 1,000 national parks.
Wow.
It's insane.
I knew there were a lot. I didn't realize there were 1,000 national parks.
Yeah.
So, Leslie Knope's job. That's a big job.
Number 2. A towering giant named General Sherman is Sequoia National Park's most well-known resident. Estimated to be around 2,000 years old, it stands at a height of 275 feet, making it the largest living tree on Earth.
Wow.
This magnificent tree played a significant role in the establishment of the first national park that was created to protect a living organism.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's interesting.
Number 3. Despite the resemblance of the Grand Canyon to the land before time, no dinosaur remains have been found at this famous national park. The rock formations on the canyon walls date back hundreds of millions of years before the existence of dinosaurs, but it is believed that the canyon was not formed until long after the extinction of dinosaurs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But wouldn't they be... Wouldn't there still be fossils, like, around there?
Apparently there's not.
No?
They haven't found any near the Grand Canyon.
That's just so interesting because dinosaurs lived everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dinosaurs lived, like, they found fossils in the United Kingdom. Like, dinosaurs lived everywhere. So the fact that there's no, even predating the Grand Canyon, the fact that there's no fossils there is...
It's pretty wild.
Fascinating, yeah.
Yeah.
And it may just be that they didn't fossilize.
Yeah. Number 4. The world's first international peace park, the Waterton Glacier International Peace Park, was established in 1932 to promote cross-border goodwill and preserve the shared biodiversity and history between the two locations. Located at Waterton Lake, Goat Haunt serves as the park's hub. To cross the border between the United States and Canada, at this point, a valid passport is required, and the accompanying stamp features an image of a mountain goat.
Cute.
Yeah. Number 5. Yellowstone National Park is home to the only place in the U.S. where buffalo have lived without interruption since prehistoric times.
Wow.
The bison herd in the park has grown tremendously over the years and currently stands at almost 5,000 animals, a significant increase from just 23 bison around during the early 1900s. Today,
wait, repeat the number. It's 23 okay. In the 1900s?
Yeah. Currently, and it's over 5,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah. They were hunted like crazy back in the 1800s, yeah.
I mean, I get it, because bison's quite delicious.
Yeah, it is. And it'll feed a lot of people, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, today the Yellowstone bison population is the largest and oldest group of free-ranging bison in the country.
Wow.
All right. I have an update from an Arkansas episode.
Okay.
In episode 15, which was Arkansas Part 3, I talked about the Toltec Archaeological State Park.
Mm-hmm.
The update is that on November 2nd, 2022, to better reflect the culture of the people who built the mounds, Toltec Mounds Archaeological State Park was renamed Plum Bayou Mounds Archaeological State Park. I just thought that was a pretty cool update.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because, you know, like I said, the Toltecs were not the ones who built those mounds.
Right.
So that reflects the people who actually did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What is it again? Can you repeat the name?
They named it the Plum Bayou Mounds Archaeological State Park.
Plum Bayou?
From the Plum Bayou people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plum, like the fruit plum, uh-huh. Bayou, yes. Like Louisiana Bayou.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Speaking of parks, now let's hang out and have a picnic while learning about the Ha Ha Tonka State Park.
Ha Ha Tonka!
Yes. All right. It's going to be a lot of history. Okay. So please bear with me.
Sure.
Before being established as a state park, Ha Ha Tonka was inhabited by various Native American tribes, such as the Osage and Cherokee. The region was visited by several explorers, including Daniel Boone and his son Nathan. Additionally, Zebulon Pike passed through the nearby area while en route to explore the western part of the country.
Zebulon.
Now, if you have no clue who the hell Zebulon Pike was, was like I did, here's a little bit about him. Zebulon Pike was born in New Jersey in 1779.
Is he Mormon?
Not that I know of, no.
Well, sounds like something a Mormon. I don't know why.
Yeah.
That's probably does, highly offensive to Mormons, but I don't care.
Anyways, he was born in New Jersey in 1779. At age 20, he joined the U.S. Army, just like his father, who had fought in the American Revolution. Pike started his service as a regimental paymaster stationed along the Ohio frontier.
Oh, paymaster?
He oversaw payroll and other financial transactions for his regiment or unit. That's what a paymaster is.
Okay.
Despite his lack of formal...
Oh, okay. So, sorry not to interrupt you. Zebulon is a Hebrew. It originates from the Hebrew language. What is wrong with my mouth? Hebrew language.
Yeah.
Which is why I immediately thought Mormon, because Mormonism, they have a lot of Hebrew, like they retain a lot of the Hebrew names when they, you know, because they were recreating Zion, recreating the Holy Land. Anyway.
In Northwest Missouri.
Yeah.
Anyways, despite his lack of formal education, he was an avid reader and brought books with him on his wilderness expeditions. Pike was a slim and blue-eyed young man with a pompous demeanor.
Did you say slammin'?
No.
What did you say?
Pike? Okay, sorry. He was a slammin' young man. No. Pike was a slim and blue-eyed young man. Do I need to slow it down the whole
way? I thought you said a slamming blue-eyed young man. No. I was like, what the fuck? fuck do you mean he was a slamming young man?
No. He was a
slim and
blue-eyed young man with a pompous demeanor and a habit of tilting his head to one side. He was highly ambitious and efficient. So basically, he was a douchebag.
Okay.
So.
I mean, he was a slamming young man. Wow. Did he bejewel his jeans?
All right.
His breeches?
His breeches. James Wilkinson, the commanding general of the U.S. Army, took Pike under his wing, and they began to work together. Wilkinson was a double agent for Spain, making him one of the most untrustworthy men in history.
Yeah. In history?
That's what it says.
Like, of all the Nazis,
I don't know.
He was more untrustworthy than a lot of them.
I don't know. I'm just going by what I read on the internet.
Okay.
In 1805, Wilkinson gave Pike the challenge of surveying the upper Mississippi River. Pike was ordered to explore the river, buy land from Native American tribes for future military posts, and bring back a few important chiefs to St. Louis for discussions. With a team of 20 men and a 70-foot keelboat, Pike began his journey up the Mississippi River from Fort Bellefontaine on August 9th, 1805.
Where was that? Do you know where that was? Is that in Ohio?
I have no clue.
Bellefontaine, Ohio. No.
It's spelled Bellefontaine, not Bellefountain.
Is there weather tonight?
Yeah, it's supposed to rain.
Okay, that explains why I'm hearing footsteps on the front porch.
Yeah, it's just rain.
Okay.
Anyways, or somebody's breaking in. Oh, well, that's fine. Anyways, they traveled to Cass Lake in modern-day Minnesota, which they mistakenly identified as the river's source. The expedition returned to St. Louis on April 30th, 1806.
They misidentified a lake as a river?
Yeah.
Is that what you just said? No,
they misidentified Cass Lake as the river's source. As Mississippi River's source.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although Pike's interactions with the natives were not very successful, he returned with valuable geographical information about a lesser known area of the new Louisiana Territory.
Yay.
Yeah. In 1806 to 1807, Pike embarked on a second expedition with several objectives in mind. One was to escort Osage Indian travelers back to their village from St. Louis. Another was to negotiate peace between the Kansa and Pawnee tribes and to make contact with the Comanche people on the High Plains. Yeah, good luck with that.
Mm.
They'll kick your ass.
Well, I mean, when your entire way of life is being threatened.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I know.
It's crazy. Pike also aimed to explore the headwaters of the Arkansas River, proceed south, locate the source of the Red River, and descend it to the Mississippi. Most importantly, Pike was to find out what the Spanish were doing along the poorly defined southwestern border of the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay.
Accompanying Pike were almost all the soldiers from the Mississippi River expedition, whom he referred to as, quote, damned set of rascals.
I don't know if that's slang or if he didn't like them.
I have no idea. That's what he said. A damn set of rascals. Those rascals. Nevertheless, they retained their commander's confidence. Lieutenant James Biddle Wilkinson, General Wilkinson's son, was to go part of the way and lead a small detachment back to St. Louis via the Arkansas and Mississippi rivers. General James Wilkinson launched Pike's expedition without the authorization of President Thomas Jefferson or the War Department, although it was approved retroactively. Many Americans expected a war due to the high tensions with Spain. Wilkinson, who was the governor of Louisiana at the time, was instructed to conduct intelligence activities against Spain and was authorized to use disguised army officers as traitors if necessary. Hmm. Not, that's traders as in trading stuff, not traitors.
Like. I heard, I, no, I thought you said traders, not like trading, not traitor like Donald Trump.
That's why I put traders as in trading like stuff.
And, yes.
Yeah. Anyways. However, the true intentions of Wilkinson have remained a mystery. It seems that he, in collusion with Aaron Burr.
Burr, sir?
Yeah. Was plotting a coup in the West. Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yeah. It is still unclear whether this was an act of treason meant to separate the Western territories from the Union or a plan to conquer Spanish territory without the involvement of the United States government.
Aaron Burr, sir.
Nonetheless, James Wilkinson's official and unofficial requirements were satisfied by Pike's expedition to the Spanish borderlands, although Pike was most likely unaware of Wilkinson and Burr's plots, he understood that his role as a spy for his country was crucial. Uh-huh. The correspondence between Pike and Wilkinson on July 22, 1806, unmistakably indicates that Pike was to scout as close as possible to Santa Fe, New Mexico, even if there was a risk of being apprehended by Spanish authorities.
Wow.
Should he be...
I didn't know... New Mexico, was all the way back then? Like, there was a New Mexico territory? I guess so.
That's what it says, yeah.
Wow.
Should he be discovered, he would claim that he had lost his way while traveling to Natchitoches, Louisiana? Natchitoches, Louisiana.
That was most definitely not how that word is supposed to be pronounced.
Well, how do you say it?
I don't know. I'm just saying, however you said it, not it.
Natchitoches. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
Sound like my stepmom.
If I mispronounced it, I'm sorry. Which I, as I do with every other freaking word. So.
It's fine.
On July 15th, 1806, Zebulon Pike embarked on a journey with a group of 18 enlisted men from the 1st Infantry Regiment. Lieutenant Wilkinson as his second in command, Dr. John H. Robinson, a volunteer physician, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this too, Baronet Vasquez, or Baronet, it's B-A-R-O-N-E-T.
If it's a title, it's Baronet.
I don't know. Anyways.
If he's a Baronet.
Okay. Mr. Vasquez.
That may not be his first name. That may be his title. Like Lord Huffington or ever.
An interpreter from St. Louis. The team traversed Missouri, escorting the Osage people to their villages in the Lake of the Ozarks region, then journeyed diagonally across Kansas. Pike convinced a band of Pawnees to remove the Spanish flag from their village, replacing it with the Stars and Stripes, despite a recent visit from a troop of 300 Spanish cavalry.
Oy.
5 men accompanied Lieutenant Wilkinson as he left the party upon reaching the Arkansas River. Despite 3 desertions, they managed to return to St. Louis successfully. On October 28th, Pike and 15 others began their journey up the Arkansas River, tracking a troop of Spanish cavalry. On November 11th, Pike displayed bravery and determination by deciding to continue the expedition despite the party's lack of proper clothing, equipment, and supplies for a winter journey.
Yeah. Because
what a dumbass.
Mm-hmm. Bravery, sure. Yeah.
And
stupidity.
Dumbassery.
Yep.
On November 23rd, they arrived at the present-day location of Pueblo, Colorado, after traveling almost directly to the west. While gazing at a blue peak in the Rocky Mountains toward the west, Pike was intrigued and decided to explore it with 2 of his soldiers and Dr. Robinson. The rest of the group remained at a base camp. Pike made an attempt to climb the peak, which would later be named after him. Due to insufficient supplies of winter clothing and food, he was compelled to return to the base camp after a few days. Hence, Zebulon Pike was never able to set foot on Pike's Peak.
I think that's so stupid. They named it after him, and he never even was. He never even went there.
Yeah, I mean, he went there.
Don't go here.
He wasn't even able to climb it because he was so stupid and foolish that he didn't bring winter equipment to climb it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they still named it after him. Because history is just men humping other men.
Yep. White men. Yep.
Just like metaphorically humping each other.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The geography of the area was different than what Pike and his team expected. This left them unsure of which way to go, except for following the Spanish Cavalry Trail up Four Mile Creek, the North Fork of the Arkansas River. However, this branch and the Spanish Trail dwindled, so Pike headed northward across the land.
What happened to them Spanish cavalrymen?
It was just a trail, like, where...
Yeah, but they were tracking.
No, they were following a trail that the Spanish had made.
Oh, I guess I misunderstood.
On December 12th, they discovered a river that Pike correctly identified as the South Fork of the South Platte. Pike then crossed the mountain pass and found another river, which he believed was the Red. The expedition was back on the Arkansas River, 70 miles upstream from where they had previously been. The snow deepened, and Pike could not reach the river's source, which was a disappointment. Near Salida, Colorado, the men spent Christmas eating buffalo meat.
Yeah.
They made their way down the river with the ice providing enough support for their horses. This is pretty wild. Yeah. The Royal Gorge's towering vertical walls surrounded them on both sides. They were disappointed to learn that they had traveled in a big circle that the mountains had to be crossed on foot to reach the Red River. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
On January 14th, 1807, amid a fierce blizzard in Wet Mountain
Valley. Amid.
A fierce blizzard in Wet Mountain Valley, a group of 9 men led by Pike crossed the Red River. Despite having some of Pike's best hunters with him, the group encountered difficulties when 9 of the men suffered from frostbitten feet.
Hey.
Despite this setback, they continued onwards, trudging through the snow that was sometimes up to their waists.
This guy doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing.
He's...
Like most white men who have jobs of high position.
Yeah.
Above other... That's not the way that I wanted to phrase that, but yeah. I couldn't think of the words.
I get it. I mean, yeah, he was basically...
In positions of power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Damn. Jobs of... Anyway, okay. I get it. Go ahead.
When they crossed the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, I'm sure I said that right, Pike discovered the location of what is now the Great Sand Dunes National Monument and the source of the Rio Grande, which he mistakenly identified as the Red River.
Ooh.
Which was way off, I'm sure.
Yeah.
A small stockade was constructed near Alamosa, Colorado. Dr. John Robinson obtained permission from Zebulon Pike to communicate with the Spanish officials in Santa Fe.
Oh, Dr. Robinson, you don't need permission from Zebulon. You just do whatever your heart desires, sweetheart.
Yeah. He carried a legal document that authorized him to collect debt for a merchant in Kaskaskia, Illinois.
He's a debt collector, never mind.
Yeah.
You do not have permission.
No, sir. Robinson trekked on foot to reach his destination, and upon arrival, he informed
was stoned to death.
What?
Stoned. Oh, I'm sorry, I was living in a fantasy.
Okay. He informed the Spanish governor, Alencaster, that he had recently been with a group of hunters. Alencaster became suspicious, as he should be, and reported the incident to his superiors. dispatching patrols in the hopes of capturing some of Robinson's companions. Meanwhile, Pike continued with his own mission.
Continue on, sir. I guess. If you must.
Yeah. In the meantime, Pike dispatched two rescue parties to retrieve his scattered men with Frostbite and the horses. However, only one of the sick men returned, and the others were too ill to move.
Jeez.
We can guess what's going to happen to them.
Are they going to cannibalize each other for survival?
I'm not sure yet.
Oh, okay. You're not sure yet?
It's been a while.
Okay.
It's been a while.
Fine.
They sent pieces of gangrenous toe bones to Pike as a morbid plea for help, hoping not to be abandoned.
Disgusting.
Yeah. I'm sure they didn't feel a thing.
I'm sure they were just living it up, lazy bums.
Yeah.
There's a will, there's a way.
Always.
Pull yourself up by those bootstraps, son.
On February 26, 1807, a group of Spanish soldiers arrived at Pike's fort
and informed him
that he was in Spanish territory. No way. Pike promptly ordered his flag to be taken down and rolled up. The Spanish patrol gathered the frostbitten stragglers and escorted the entire party to Santa Fe,
where they recovered and lived long, prosperous lives out from under the thumb of Zebulon Pike.
I'm sure. Pike's documents were seized and he was sent south to Chihuahua. Although neither Pike nor his men were ill-treated, most of them were returned to U.S. territory at Natchitoches, Louisiana, on June 30th, 1807.
I'm not sure that's how that's supposed to be.
Well, we're going to pretend it is. So I have no fucking clue. Dr. Robinson requested asylum in Mexico, but was denied permission to stay. Of the men, five were detained by the Spanish for 2 years. Sergeant William Meek, who killed Private Theodore Miller in an inebriated brawl, was in prison until 1821. The Spanish governor was reprimanded by his king for releasing Pike before receiving an apology from the U.S. government for trespassing.
Yeah. Dude, the U.S. government didn't send him out there to trespass in Spanish territory. That was all him.
Yeah. Upon returning to the United States, Zebulon Pike was suspected of involvement in the Burr Conspiracy, which negatively impacted his career.
I mean, his bumbling idiocracy obviously did not negatively impact his career. His association with Aaron Burr, sure.
Sure.
Sir?
Yeah. This accusation was unfounded, but it still affected him for some time. President Thomas Jefferson did not give Pike a warm welcome, despite acknowledging his military competency. However, Jefferson...
You forgot the in. In front of competency.
However, Jefferson did not view Pike as an explorer or scientist of the same...
Because he wasn't.
No. Of the same caliber as Lewis and Clark.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Pike and his men did not receive any additional pay or grants from the government for their expedition, unlike Lewis and Clark.
I mean, he didn't find anything. He got lost and ended up trespassing in España.
Yeah.
In Mexico.
Yeah, and got lost and made a circle. In 1812, Pike saw an opportunity for personal glory when the United States declared war on Great Britain. On April 27, 1813, while leading a successful attack on York, the capital of Upper Canada, modern-day Toronto, Brigadier General Pike was fatally wounded by flying debris from a powder magazine explosion. Despite performing extraordinary feats for his country throughout his remarkable life, Pike was never fortunate.
mean, he was just like your typical idiot colonizer moron.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing special about him except for the fact that somehow he managed to trick people into thinking that he could do something he couldn't do and proved he couldn't do it.
Yeah. Today, he is barely remembered except for having a mountain named after him, which
he never
had a chance to climb. Yeah. Because he was stupid and didn't take winter gear.
Yeah.
If he would have done that, he would have had the chance to.
Right.
And it would have still been named after him.
I mean, God, can we rename Pike's Peak to something else? I'm like,
I know.
Ugh. Yeah. Can we name it after a Native American person?
That's what I was about to say. Yeah.
Or just name it after a natural.
Well, with our
government, what is it? Is it made of granite? Call it Granite Peak.
With our government now, there's no chance.
There's no chance. No. White men over everything.
Yep. Now back to Ha Ha Tonka State Park. Settlers arrived in the area and Robert G. Scott surveyed the land as a possible location for a railroad route in the early 1890s.
Okay.
Although it was not a viable option, Scott was captivated by the area's breathtaking views, towering bluffs, natural springs, and caverns.
Lots of caverns.
Yeah.
Speaking of caverns, this is funny. I was coming out of my facial today and opened Instagram and saw a meme that somebody had shared. You know how I asked you a couple weeks ago how often you think about the Roman Empire? And like, you never do, but I do, mostly because like I just think about history, and the Roman Empire comes up a lot because they like fucking destroyed half of the world.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah. When I think about the Roman Empire, just for clarification, it's never in, like, awe or, like, wonder. It's always in, like, God, I wish I could go back in time and just, like, fucking destroy it myself. But anyway, so somebody shared a meme about how, like, Roman Empire this, Roman Empire that. Real men think about, like, I don't remember, like, 2 million tons of cheese under Springfield or something.
Oh, yeah.
It was a post from this account, like, Springfield Underground Cheese Posting or something like that.
It's crazy.
What was that?
I thought that was there's a storm. And
yes, there was thunder. Like, oh, are the speakers?
I thought I heard the speakers. I don't know.
I heard thunder. I didn't hear anything else.
Anyways.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
It's about, you said caverns, and it reminded me of cheese in the Springfield Underground.
Yeah. I've never been down there.
I swear to God, no, I thought you delivered mail down there.
I did. Their boxes are outside. I've never delivered anything down there.
Oh, damn it.
I know. Although,
maybe it was
my
stepdad that used to go down there. Because I straight up told my client, you used to talk about how you could smell the cheese. But maybe it was Ken that used to talk about that. Yeah, it was
somebody else. I mean, I've heard that too, but I've never said that.
Oops. False memories.
I know there was an incident. Like, I was casing mail, and then right before I went to deliver mail there was an incident of a former worker that had a gun and threatened people down there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
America.
That was crazy.
Anyway. Glad you didn't go down there that day.
Yeah. Where was I?
Rail line, not viable.
All right.
Natural beauty caverns.
Natural spring caverns, yep. After he returned to his home state of Iowa in 1894, he convinced his partner Kellogg to purchase a large parcel of land where they established a small settlement and named it Gunter Springs in honor of a former resident. Gunter Springs...
Wait. They established the settlement. How was there a former resident?
Maybe from there... I have no fucking clue.
That makes sense.
Anyways.
This is where context is important, yeah, Mr. Researcher.
I'm dumb. Anyways, Gunter Springs quickly flourished and several new structures were erected approximately 3 miles southwest of what is now Camdenton.
Mm.
Despite the success of the settlement, Scott felt that more romantic and fitting name was necessary to reflect the unique landscape and natural beauty of the area. He ultimately chose the Osage Indian phrase, Hahatanka, meaning laughing spirit or big laugh or smiling waters.
Okay.
One of those, because I searched that, and one of those is what it means.
Okay.
Which referred to the bubbling springs. In 1895, the post office was renamed from Gunter Springs to Hahatanka.
Okay.
Of course, it has to have a post office in it.
Well, I mean, civilization requires communication. Yeah. So, you expect them to use courier owls?
No, I meant the whole story, because I'm a postal worker. Of course,
I know. I'm just being sarcastic.
I know. Anyways, a visit in 1903 by Robert McClure Snyder, a wealthy businessman. Of course, he's a businessman. From Kansas City, Missouri.
That's just rich white man for I have no skills, but give me your money and I will.
Yeah.
Do what I want with it.
Yep. The wealthy are called businessmen because, of course.
No skills.
No skills. Anyways, left a lasting impression.
Okay.
Okay, the visit left a lasting impression.
Okay.
Envisioning a private retreat for his family, he eventually purchased about 2,500 acres of land. The purchase included the Hahatanka settlement, as well as Hahatanka Lake and Spring, which had been sold by Robert Scott for a significant profit. Of course, they're selling land that basically wasn't theirs in the first place, so.
I mean.
But it wouldn't be America if it didn't happen. So.
It wouldn't be mankind, honestly. The idea that human beings can own land is ridiculous. We're bacteria.
Well.
I mean.
It's part of life, I guess, so.
It's just, it's not how it should be, but whatever. Anyway, go ahead.
It is. Despite selling off most of his properties, Scott kept some land by the Nyangwa River and eventually established Camp Nyangwa, a campground and rustic retreat near the future Lake of the Ozarks.
Hmm.
Snyder, born in Columbus, Indiana in 1852, was one of seven children in the Snyder family. His ancestors, including his father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, were millers who owned various mills and grocery stores across Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, and Missouri.
That thunder scared me.
Yeah. Lots of thunder out there. Despite his humble beginnings, Snyder went on to achieve great things. Moving to St. Louis in 1876, Snyder worked in the wholesale grocery sector and then moved to Kansas City in 1880, where he continued his work in the industry. He later ventured into real estate, banking, and utilities, and eventually became wealthy. By 1905, he had amassed a fortune including investments in land holdings, real estate, oil, and natural gas wells, cattle herds, banking interests, and other investments across the nation. This motherfucker was rich.
Hate him. I hate everything about him.
Well, that's how this country came to be.
Hate everything about it.
Well, it happened. So.
Well, you know, it shouldn't have.
I know. Upon purchasing the property from Scott in 1904, Snyder immediately began making significant improvements. He envisioned a European-style castle with the center atrium rising 3.5 stories to a skylight.
Wrong climate, bruh.
Yeah, I know. 9 greenhouses, an 80-foot private water tower, and a carriage house.
Dude.
Yeah.
Excessive.
Construction on the mansion began in 1905, utilizing stonemasons from Scotland who quarried stone and timber from the immediate area. A European supervisor managed every step of the construction. Adrian Van Brunt, an architect from Kansas City, designed a 3.5-story masterpiece that boasted a central hallway that stretched the entire height of the building. The retreat also came with a stone carriage house. Snyder spoke of the refuge saying, quote, "Here I will spend my leisure, secure from the worries of business and the excitement of city life. I will fish and loaf and explore the caves of these hills with no fear of intrusion.
Get lost and die."
Basically. End quote. Unfortunately, Snyder's plan of constructing a mansion at... Damn. Quite a storm out there. Unfortunately, Snyder's plan of constructing a mansion at Hawtaka was halted when he passed away due to a car accident, oops, which was one of the first in the state. Despite his tragic demise, Snyder was recognized as a determined entrepreneur who knew how to achieve significant things.
No, he was just born wealthy and knew how to take wealth from other people to enrich his own self.
Yeah, pretty much. In his obituary in the Kansas City Journal, Snyder was commended for his resilience, stating that, quote, "He was a man who understood big things and made them win by keeping up the fight when other men might have been ready to give up."
That literally says nothing.
I know.
That says nothing of substance.
I know.
"I understand big things." Okay, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You're the biggest brain, the biggest hands.
Yep. Regrettably, Snyder's passing put an end to his ambitious Haha Tonka's plans.
Regrettably.
It took 16 years to finish the castle. Snyder's sons, Robert Jr., Leroy, and Kenneth, worked on it, but progress was slow and not as elaborate as originally planned. Finally, in 1922, the interior and upper floors were completed, and Robert Snyder Jr. lived in the castle. He collected over 1,000 volumes of Missourian regional history, literature, and folklore, which were kept at the castle until he died in 1937. Today, this extensive collection is housed at the University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Wow.
In 1937, Robert Snyder Jr. passed away. During that time, the Great Depression and a prolonged legal dispute with Union Electric had drained the family's wealth.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Which family lost money?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm feeling things about rich people today.
I know. Over the years, the family endured hardship as they struggled to hold on to the Haha Tonka Castle. They had to sell Snyder's natural gas supply business to finance the legal battle with Eastern interests. Eventually, the surviving brothers had no choice but to lease the castle to Mrs. Ellis, who operated it as a hotel for several years.
Good for her, I guess. I don't know.
The castle faced disasters twice, one in 1942 and the other in 1976. The first fire destroyed much of the mansion and the adjacent carriage house, leaving only the outer walls and water tower standing. After 36 years of abandonment, the state of Missouri purchased the property and opened it to the public as a state park. Unfortunately, the water tower was later vandalized and burned, but has since been renovated to its original form.
Huh.
The park covers around 3,000 acres located on the Niagara arm of the Lake of the Ozarks and boasts diverse geographical formations such as natural bridges, streams, caves, and ruins of the Haha Tonka Castle. There are various trails and walkways throughout the park that allow easy access for visitors to explore different features such as springs, sinkholes, and more. The park is home to over 400 species of plants, which produce different wildflowers, which produce different wildflower displays during the summer season. That'd be cool to go see.
Yeah.
Visitors can experience the park's rich landscape through a short self-guided nature trail or by taking a 7-mile backpack trail. There is also a visitor center where a large relief map of the park is on display, which is carved from stone.
Wow.
The state park is situated approximately 5 miles southwest of Camdenton, Missouri. And now for the hauntings.
Okay.
All right. Deep in the heart of Hawatonka State Park, there lies a castle. The castle was once a grand estate built by a wealthy businessman in the early 1900s. However, tragedy struck when a fire ripped through the castle and some outer buildings. The castle was left in ruins to decay. There have been reports of strange occurrences in the area. Visitors have reported hearing ghostly whispers and footsteps, and many reports of people being watched as they traverse through the park. Most of the reports happen around the castle ruins. Some have even claimed to see apparitions of the castle's former residents. Visitors have mentioned their electronic devices malfunctioning or batteries draining unusually fast while at the park. One particular eerie incident occurred when a few friends decided to sneak into the park at night and go hiking. When they got to the castle ruins, they felt like someone was watching them. They searched everywhere with their flashlights, but no one else could be seen. They dismissed the incident as they started hearing voices. As freaky as that was, they wanted to stay and see if they could experience more paranormal experiences. The three friends decided to split up and walk around the castle. One went to the left, one through the middle, and one to the right around the castle walls.
Never split up.
They all still felt like someone was creepily watching them. Nothing happened until they met at the other side of the ruins. It was then when they were facing the castle that they saw a dark figure walking towards them from the center of the ruins. They got too scared to face the entity, ran back to their car, and sped away not to look back.
I'm guessing the parking lot is close to the castle.
I guess so. Or they ran, to get to the car. So, who knows? Another visitor reported feeling a cold breeze on a warm summer day while exploring the castle ruins. When she turned around, she saw a figure dressed in old-fashioned clothing standing behind her. The figure disappeared as quickly as it appeared, leaving the visitors shaken and afraid. Despite the spooky happenings, many visitors still flock to Hawatonka State Park to explore the castle ruins and surrounding trails. Some even do some paranormal investigating, hoping to catch a glimpse of the castle's ghostly inhabitants. Whether you believe in ghosts or not, there's no denying the eerie atmosphere of Hawatonka State Park's abandoned castle. If you're brave enough to explore the ruins at night, be prepared for a spine-tingling experience you won't soon forget.
I bet.
Yeah. So, that is Hawatonka State Park.
Yeah.
Interesting. Pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, given the history of the land and the area, it's not surprising to me that things didn't end up well for the people who built the castle.
Yeah.
By the way, what did Zebulon Pike have to do at all with Hawatonka? What was that about?
Because he was one of the explorers that explored through the area.
You never mentioned Hawatonka, though. Like,
before Hawatonka was Hawatonka,
they were out west.
He went through this area.
Oh, yeah. I guess you very only briefly touched on that. I was, like, listening the whole time, waiting for the connection.
It's
towards the beginning. And then it never happened.
He explored through the area.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. That is it. Do you have anything?
No, just... Right. I'm not surprised that the castle burned down. I mean, it is Osage land that was stolen, and I think that...
Well, if you fuck with the native spirits, they're going to do some shit.
I mean, genus loci. It's the spirits of the land.
Yeah.
That's the Latin for land spirit.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, like, the land remembers...
Yeah. So, next month is spooky season.
Spooky season!
And we will have 6 episodes. I like to get my episodes out on Mondays. Uh-huh. There's going to be 5 Mondays, and then I'm going to have a bonus episode on Halloween Day.
Yay!
Which
so
will
much work! I
know. Ashley's going to do 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on, like, 2 at the same time right now, so...
Okay.
It's gonna be, I think, really cool.
Great.
So...
I hope I don't let you down.
You're fine. I like...
You say that like I'm gonna let you down.
No, you're not. You're not. You're not gonna let me down. This year has actually, other than...
Sucked?
Well, sucked. But... As far as getting episodes out, I'm glad that I, minus last week.
Well, that was my fault.
It was both of our fault. So
I was cranky and
yeah.
You didn't hit record for half a fucking hour.
Yeah, just letting you guys know, this is
a hodgepodge episode. We recorded half of it last week and the other half of it.
Yeah,
tonight.
Yep. Because I took a small break and came back and started talking, and my dumbass forgot to hit record, and we were talking for at least 25 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And I was 21 minutes in.
Yeah.
So that sucked.
Yep. It did. Sucked very bad.
And we were like, fuck it, let's just go to bed.
No, I was like, fuck it, let's just go to bed. You would have kept droning on and on and on and on and on had I let you. But I had to get up and work in the morning.
Yep.
And we know how you feel about when you have to get up and work in the morning.
Yeah, I get cranky.
All bets are off.
I know.
Can't do anything if it interferes with Paul's beauty rest.
I know.
But when it's Ashley's beauty rest.
My whole 6 hours of sleep. Yes. Just kidding. All right. Let's get out of here. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com. You can email me anything. Say hi, whatever.
No dick pics.
No dick pics. Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. Tell me what haunted location you want to hear about or any paranormal thing. All the links will be in the show notes. I do have this on YouTube as audio, but not video yet.
There's some pictures to go along.
Yeah, on social media, not YouTube.
No, you don't put pictures in the YouTube?
No.
Oh.
You can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. Because if you don't do 5 stars, I won't get the podcast out there and people won't be able to, you know, listen and all that good stuff.
And all that jazz.
All that jazz. You can now support this show with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes. This will help with updating recording equipment and other necessities for the podcast.
Necessitize.
Then when I get around to getting Patreon up and running, we'll have that. You can support us that way.
If you want to.
If you want to. You don't have to. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
Or...
The link for that will be in the show notes. Also, the link for that is basically also, for now, the website,
kind of. Which doesn't exist.
Well, it goes to... Spotify for podcasters or whatever, and it goes straight to my podcast page.
Oh, okay.
So you can listen to the episodes on there too.
Wherever fine podcasts are available.
Yes.
Or I listen to a podcast that she says that. Yeah.
Exploring the unknown and mysterious is always interesting. Just like trying a new flavor of an adult beverage. Like a cryptid, the taste may be unfamiliar initially, but discovering something unique and exciting makes it worth the adventure. Until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye.
He was a slamming young man. No.